This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy is good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
What?
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
Down with the King for years, about 10 of them. Recruiting suckers, Mack and Mike and making men of them.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic podcast that is hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I'm the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime. He's an editor at Yahoo Sports. He's generally a nice guy, and as we learned this week, he's a degenerate gambler that watches NBA Summer League games to try to find tips. Marcus Vandenberg, what's going on, brother?
You can't prove that. You can't prove I was betting.
Hey, man, that side eye told said a lot of things, man. It spoke volumes.
That side eye said Lakers plus one, and it came down to overtime.
Yeah, anybody that hasn't seen that particular video, head over to the Kings of Sport Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport, and it will be probably the most entertaining 10 seconds of footage you watch all day.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to see that. I knew I was sitting close, but I figured who's watching Summer League in July? So I checked my Instagram and someone from my high school posted the video. So, surprise.
So how many Summer League games did you catch?
Oh, I've seen 5 games so far. I'm going back today, and then I'm heading back home Thursday. So, Seen some action. It's been it's Summer League. You can't really make too much into it, but it's fun to watch these young guys, especially Wiggins. Wiggins was he's been the highlight so far. He didn't do much in the game I saw, minus that dunk he pulled off. But he's had some spring in his step. He's gonna be excited for Cleveland or Minnesota, yeah, or wherever he lands.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, we'll get into Wiggins and his future with the Cleveland Cavaliers a little bit later on here in the A block, but there was a big event on the world stage that concluded last week, and we talked about, I guess, the semifinal was going on right when we were recording last week's show, and the finals took place the following Sunday, so no more soccer talk for at least 2 or 4 more years.
We're not doing an EPL preview show next month? EPL starts 30 days from today. Manchester United, no?
Hell no, we ain't talking about the EPL, man. You want Premier League talk, you need to call Bobby Fresh or Dennis Black and Asian. I'm not about that life, man.
Oh, oh well, I tried, people.
Hey, I talked World Cup for 3 or 4 weeks. That's as much soccer as you're going to get out of me, man.
That's more impressive than talking hockey, so kudos to you.
I do what I can for the people.
Oh, by the way, Germany won. Did we even say who won?
Oh, yeah. That's... Germany won. Your boy Messi got crushed by the media, even though he got, what, the most outstanding player trophy?
Yeah.
Which I guess is a consolation prize. He can cry himself to sleep with the trophy and the supermodels and the millions of dollars.
Yeah, Messi will be just fine. No, no crying for Messi. Don't cry for me, Messi. He's good.
if I was more into soccer, that would have been the music that opened today's show.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
Yeah, the Madonna Evita version. Didn't she make like a club version of that song?
Probably, yeah. That sounds like something she would do.
Yeah, but that would have been the way we would have came on. But yeah, Germany won, and you know, I watched it like the last 5 minutes was all I watched of the World Cup final, and that I'm good. I'm good with that. I didn't need to stay around for the previous 2 hours of football.
It was not an exciting match. There are other exciting matches in the World Cup. This was not one of them.
No, I much rather enjoyed the semifinal where they just kept cutting the shots of Brazilians crying, little children's dreams being demolished.
Yeah, because homes were demolished to build those stadiums. That's the problem. They should have at least won if you're going to do all that in Brazil.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're going to uproot the entire infrastructure of your country, you might as well win the thing.
Hopefully. I mean, Olympics, I don't know if Brazil is a powerhouse in the Summer Olympics, but it might be a similar situation 2 years from now.
And they didn't even get third place.
No, they got shut out, fourth place.
Yeah, so not good times to be a Brazilian. But you know who it is a good time to be, Marcus Vandenberg?
Who's that?
Derek Jeter.
Or Michael Jeter, depending on who you talk to. You see that on Twitter last night?
No, what's going on?
CBS News and their 3.5 million followers on Twitter. They tweeted out a tweet that basically called Derek Jeter Michael Jeter. And it was the number one trending topic during the All-Star game last night.
What do they do? They transpose the Derek Jeter and Michael Jordan?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Mike Trout. I don't know. It's not even Michael Trout. It's Mike Trout. So I'm not sure what they were doing. But yeah, it took them forever to correct it.
And Michael Jeter.
Yeah, so Michael Jeter was trending last night.
Yeah, so the All-Star game took place last night from Target Field in Minneapolis. But before we get into the game, man, just the big storyline coming into the All-Star game was about that man, Derek Jeter, and the Jordan brand put out an awesome commercial with all these New York celebrities, and even had Phil Jackson and Jeannie Buss. Everybody just kind of tipping their cap and showing respect to Derek Jeter. And I'm not a Yankee fan. I hate the Yankees. But even I was a bit touched by this commercial.
Yeah, I mean, you don't hate Derek Jeter, do you?
I made a tweet last night at the Kings of Sport Twitter, Kings of Sport, KOS_POD.com. Derek Jeter and Ichiro are the only Yankees that I can tolerate and respect.
I'm trying to think who else is on that team. I don't mind Sabathia. There's a couple guys who...
Yes, this is a big, fat, jolly guy, so yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, can't stand McCann.
McCann is dead to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, he hasn't done anything at the plate, so don't worry.
Yeah, what'd you think of that ad?
Oh, it was a really good ad. It was, you know, it's hard to dislike Jeter. I'm sure you know, as Red Sox fans who appreciate and respect Jeter, so... I'm glad he's getting his proper send-off, similar to what Mariano Rivera did last year. And sort of like last year, the Yankees won't make the playoffs at this rate. So his send-off's going to end abruptly in September, as opposed to one last run in the postseason. But I'm glad he's getting his proper due and his final tour around the league.
Yeah, it's very similar to the Cal Ripken farewell.
Yeah, yeah, and that also ended... not in the playoffs as well, so very fitting.
So, yeah, I think Jeter is – the reason I like Jeter is, man, he's a professional. You know, you never really heard any off-the-field nonsense with Jeter. Like, Jeter is a guy, even though he's a contemporary, he's the guy that A-Rod should have been whenever he grew up, but that never happened.
Yeah. Very smooth, very just – sort of low-key for being such a superstar that he is. And you can make the case that, yeah, he's probably getting a bump in terms of his legacy because he's a Yankee. You know, if he was doing this in Minnesota or Kansas City or...
The Astro.
Well, yeah, take someone like Craig Biggio, for example. Craig Biggio, I'm not going to say he has better numbers than Derek Jeter, different positions a little bit, but... he's someone, if you looked at his numbers, he had amazing numbers for second baseman, and no one is ever, you know, reminiscing about Craig Biggio and his numbers. And that's where Derek Jeter has benefited from being a Yankee and being the captain and being the face of that franchise since, geez, the mid-90s now.
True. I mean, it's like you get a little bit of a bump if you're in New York or L.A. or Chicago, those major markets. That being said, I think the other side of the coin is you have to produce in those markets. You know, they're going to give you more of the praise, but you have to produce, and Derek Jeter's done that, you know, for a long time.
Yeah, he has, and you know, even now, he's not having a great season, but he's still playing well enough to at least start shortstop for the Yankees.
No, he had a hell of a double in that All-Star game, which came into some controversy.
Yeah, so Adam Wainwright admitted that he might have grooved a couple fastballs to Jeter, and Jeter responded with a double, and that's great and all, but as a Dodger fan, this game does matter for Dodger fans, since home field advantage is attached to this exhibition game, and you know, when you get down 3-0 in the first inning, that's it's not a good start for the National League, and part of that was because, in theory, that he was grooving fastballs to Jeter, when if you started tweeting Kershaw, Kershaw would have struck him out.
Yeah, but you know, I think that's one of the things that I've never liked, and it's kind of taken some of the enjoyment out of the All-Star game for me, which the American League won 5-3, by the way. But I wanted to get your take on that, Marcus. What do you think about the All-Star game deciding home field? I think it's counterproductive, because the All-Star game should be about, you know, those cool moments, and if you want to groove a pitch to a guy, or, you know, what was that one year where Barry Bonds ran out because who was it that kept snagging his
hit? Torrey Hunter, I think.
Yeah, Torrey Hunter, and he ran out to center field and picked him up. Like, those are the moments that are indelible with the All-Star game, and now that it, quote-unquote, means something, you know, I think some of the joy is, you know, kind of been taken out of the game.
Yeah, it's not fun to watch. I mean, I had it on yesterday in the background, so I was at Summer League, but I had no interest in watching, really. I understand it matters, but at the same time, there's no spontaneous moments. Everything is – it's probably more – you know, serious in their eyes than a Sunday game in July, a regular season game, because they know what's the outcome is for the winner for that game. So, yeah, I would rather see them take a format similar to the NBA All-Star game, where, you know, those guys are having fun and they can get serious in the final fourth quarter. But for the first three quarters, they're out there just goofing and joking around and enjoying each other's company. But this game is, you know, it's, we got people going after my boy Yasiel Puig for going 0-for-3, because you know this game, quote unquote, counts. But
he went 0-for-the damn week though, didn't he?
Yeah, he didn't have, well, he said he had fun, but he did not produce at all. No home runs, no hits, 3 strikeouts, and 1 trip to Miami. So,
and that was the big kerfluffle about last year's game when Puig got left off.
Yeah, they wanted him in the game, and he made the team. He was voted in by the fans, and didn't do much to show for it as a result. But that's all right. It's his first one.
Yeah, I mean, he'll have other opportunities. But, yeah, getting back to what you said about the fun of the game, like, I remember what Randy Johnson and John Kruk.
Oh, yeah, with the
just, you know, just, like, you don't get moments like that anymore, and I think it's because – so much importance has been put on the game, you know, it decides home field in the World Series, and I don't see how the two should be connected.
No, and that's probably something that won't change until Bud Selig decides to leave office. So we have at least a couple years of this new, of the same format of where, you know, the game, quote unquote, counts. But yeah, I couldn't even tell you the last fun moment that stands out in the last 5 years from an All-Star game.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the last time I really enjoyed an All-Star game was probably that Barry Bonds game, and you're talking, what, 10 years ago?
That was, yeah, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
When did Lasorda fall? I guess that was pretty recently. Remember when he was third base coaching and someone ripped a line drive and he took a tumble? But that's like, you know, you don't get those moments, and that's what the sport needs, especially when you can capitalize during a time of the summer where there's nothing going on in the sports world. It's all eyes on baseball, but if those eyes don't have anything interesting to watch, then they're going to find something else to tune into, like Summer League.
Yeah. Just like Summer League, yeah. Because as we all know, that is the hot ticket.
It's a hot ticket in Vegas, man.
Real quick, one last thing on baseball. You mentioned the commish. Do you think that the game gets better or worse whenever he decides to step down, which probably won't be in our lifetime.
I always added it better. It can't get any worse. And I think baseball as a sport is starting to head in the wrong direction, unfortunately. And it's a combination of things, I'm guessing. But I guess the big one is just, well, besides the pace of the game that they need to speed up, but star power, and they need to really capitalize off guys like Mike Trout and Yasiel Puig and really brand them like NBA guys brand their stars, because you have between those two guys, and if Bryce Harper ever decides to be Bryce Harper, you have three potential young superstars that you should really market the sport around, similar to what they did. Well, I mean, they didn't really brand Jeter as a superstar. He sort of became the face of baseball by default, but I don't think there's an active push by MLB at any point to brand guys like A-Rod and Nomar and Jeter as the face of the sport. But if they did something similar with these outfielders, then I think that the sport could, you know, turn it around, because kids need a reason to watch and a reason to cheer and people to look up to, and why not guys like Trout and Puig and Harper?
And we talk about the decline in viewership and participation in the black community. Like, why isn't Andrew McCutchen a bigger star?
That too, yeah. I don't get that at all. I mean, he's putting up better numbers than his MVP season this year. I guess part of that is him being stuck in Pittsburgh is not helping his case, but someone like McCutchen is a guy who flies under the radar, and, you know, I'm sure the average sports fan, if you saw Andrew McCutchen on the street, would have no idea who this guy was. And that's unfortunate.
Was that Larry Fitzgerald?
Yeah. Way shorter. McCutchen's only like 5'10", so he's a small dude.
Yeah.
Small dude with dreads. He'd be like, oh, okay, it's just some black dude. Like, no, it's MVP.
Yeah. It was, I don't know if that was Andrew McCutchen or Wale.
Yeah.
One of them.
Well,
yeah. Shout out to John Pollock. So that's your All-Star wrap up. Looking forward to the second half of the season, man, because like I said, baseball is on the low, probably at both of our favorite sports, and I'm looking forward to seeing how the season unfolds.
Yeah, we have a good window now between now and, I guess, the NFL season starts 50 days from now, so we have 50 days of solid baseball attention before NFL starts and then NBA starts, and then it's back to baseball being a minute topic.
See you in October.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the NBA, that's where we're going to leave things off in segment one this week. And I don't know if you heard, Marcus, but there was a little bit of activity last week when it came to free agency.
Yeah, some guy went home or something.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we're all talking about Nick Young is back in L.A.
Swaggy P.
And the masses rejoiced.
Or groaned.
A groan. But there was also another big move, of course. Cleveland is celebrating the return of the King. LeBron James went back home, and I don't think it was a huge surprise, but it was a bit surprising, Marcus.
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise. I know we discussed it the week before, and I don't think we gave Cleveland a legit shot at landing him, but I guess, you know, looking back at things and reading his letter, it all sort of made sense on why he's going back, and it'll make for a great story this season. But for the people who think that the Cavs are going to be the favorite to win the NBA title this year, have you seen the rest of that roster? It's talented. It's young. That's the problem. I think Miami still has a better team currently than Cleveland after what they were able to do with keeping Bosch and Wade and bringing in Lyle Dane and Josh McRoberts and Danny Granger and bringing back Birdman. I think they have a more solid roster. And I'm going to be intrigued by the four times that Miami and Cleveland play this season, because I think it's going to be very telling. And I think Miami's going to have a point every time they play Cleveland to really try to stick it to LeBron and the Heat, or LeBron and the Cavs when they play this season.
Yeah, and I think that You know, it was kind of funny watching all of these superstars, all of these millionaires, all of these grown men just kind of standing on the sidelines waiting for LeBron to make a move. And it's kind of like back in the days when you used to go to the playground and see the girls play double dutch.
Mm-hmm.
And you see like Chris Bosh on the sideline, Melo on the sideline, Pau Gasol. They all just do something, LeBron, so we could jump in.
And then they jump. They wasted no time jumping in after that.
Yeah, so Bosh staying in Miami for a big pay raise. I think he got like $30 million more than he was being offered in Houston.
Yeah.
You had Melo staying in New York, at least for the time being. And then you had Pau Gasol heading to Chicago, which is a very intriguing move.
Pau, one of two forwards that we know of, who turned down more money from the Lakers to go elsewhere. Dirk Nowitzki was offered a match deal from the Lakers. He turned that down to stay at Dallas. Pau was offered more money by the Lakers than Chicago. He turned that down to take less to play for a winner. So, interesting move for Chicago. They, between Gibson and Noah, and now Gasol, and also McDermott, and they have this Euro kid they're signing that they're bringing over from Europe. So, they're deep at the 4-5 position. And with Thibodeau, I think that could be, even though Pau doesn't play much defense, I think he can find a way to work him into the offense.
And McDermott, too, has been, lighting up the summer league.
Yeah, he's been great.
You have a better idea than me being there with your boots on the ground.
Daddy mid buckets. Yeah, he's no Adam Morrison. He can do more than just, you know, score. And he could be a key factor for that Chicago Bulls team if they find a way to, if he can sort of play like a sort of a stretch three, bit four situation. He's very impressive so far.
You say he needs to watch some Keith Van Horn footage.
There you go.
Get his game up.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to the big story, which is LeBron headed home, I thought it was very interesting, starting with the letter, that he made a point to compare his time in Miami to college.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an element of this guy's life thus far that makes a lot of sense. When he left Cleveland, he was 23. Now he's heading back. He's almost 30. You know, it's close to 30, and it's like there's a big difference between the mentality of a 23-year-old and a guy that, you know, heading into his 30s.
And sort of like college, he did 4 years at a amazing place in Miami with scenery and all that jazz. And
got to hang out with his frat brothers.
Yeah, he got the ticket, and he went to class, and he got some A's, a couple A's, and he got a couple C's and D's along the way, but he graduated, he's graduating, and he's moving back home. Like a lot of us, you know, I went to school in New York and did my time in New York and decided to go back home, and it's no different. I mean, the only difference is he's making a lot more money in his move home than I did, so.
And he also did a smart thing, which I think a lot of folks are missing out on, and that is he only signed a 2-year deal, and he's got an option to leave after the first year.
Yeah, and people decided to work themselves up over this contract, and the idea of us doing this whole thing this time next year, but it's a strategy move. There's a couple reasons that the CBA's coming up for the players in a couple years, so a match deal now isn't the match same. It won't be the match deal. It will be in 2 years from now, and there's also a new TV deal that should be coming up soon for the league, so it's more of a financial reason as to why he's doing this, but he does have the option to become a free agent after next season, and there is a certain team, well, yeah, they should have cap room. There's a certain team in the Big Apple that will have cap room, in theory, because they'll be shedding Stoudemire and Bargnani, so not that he would, I don't think, leave Cleveland after like this, after 1 year. Would be the ultimate, like, Alfred Tunawa departure.
So it's a nasty move.
But it's an option. So unless he decides to opt in early, then we'll have to sit through this whole process next year.
Yeah, and I there's a possibility, but I don't think that he's going to take that. Matter of fact, I think he's going to do the opposite of what he's done the last couple of times, and he's going to opt in quickly and quietly.
Nah, let's hope so.
But I also think, you know, you mentioned the TV money and the CBA. That's definitely a part of it. I also think 2 years gives him an opportunity to keep Dan Gilbert in check in the sense of, you know, now that you got me back, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And if Dan doesn't make the right moves in those 2 years, you know, he can say, I came back, but, you know, I changed, but the organization didn't, so I got to go.
They've added Mike Miller. They've added James Jones, some familiar faces around LeBron. And they're still in the Kevin Love talks, but that would require them trading Andrew Wiggins. I don't think you should do that. I think you should at least give Wiggins a shot to see what he can do in Cleveland. And, you know, Love will be a free agent at the end of this season. So if worst comes to worst, you can try to make a run for Love then. But
yeah, and I mean, Love said he wants to play with LeBron. I think there's two ways you could play it. You could wait for free agency, or you could just wait until the trade deadline, because, you know, if you don't want to trade Wiggins, what you can gain from keeping the roster as presently constituted up until that point is Deion Waiters gets to play with LeBron. Anthony Bennett gets to play with LeBron. Some of these young dudes get to look better by playing with LeBron. You know, Tito and Jermaine, they cool, they had talent. But when you put them next to Michael, you're like, damn, that's a good band. So when you put Deion Waiters and Anthony Bennett on the same court, LeBron, their value is going to go up. And I think maybe you can make a deal where you send Waiters, Bennett, and some picks for Kevin Love, you know, once you get a chance to see these guys actually play on the court.
Yeah, and Bennett is another guy who's really impressed me during summer league. He's lost some weight. He looks more like the number one pick he should have been last year than the pick he turned out to be. And if he can become a solid contributor for that team, then that's going to go a long way for Cleveland.
And we got some feedback from a listener on the Kings of Sport Facebook page. I'm going to bring that up here in a second. But the last kind of component I want to talk about is Miami. And we saw already that some idiot came out and defaced the Miami Heat mural, blacked out LeBron's face. You know, we've seen expressions of disappointment and sadness, and I think that's fine. It's fine to be disappointed. It's fine to even be angry with LeBron, but a lot of the hate that I'm hearing out of the Miami fan base is like, come on, you guys were the mistress and Cleveland was the wife. You got four good years. You went to the finals four straight times. You got two rings, and now he wants to go back to his wife. So you really don't have a complaint in this situation.
You know, if it was any other fan base, I would feel, you know, sorry for them. But as we saw during the finals year after year, that fan base is pretty fickle. So I'm not going to shed any tears for the Miami fans who are now upset because LeBron is leaving. If, you know, if Wade were to leave and LeBron were to stay, then I'd understand why people would be upset at Wade. But, you know, he was a rental. That's what he essentially was. He was a four-year rental, and he got two titles out of it. So enjoyed the two titles. Le Batard had a column this week, Dan Le Batard, that, you know, he pretty much summed up that statement to Miami fans and said, hey, look, you enjoy what you got from the 4 years, and let's not hold this against LeBron for what he did, because he did it the right way. He owed nothing to Miami. He owed nothing to Pat Riley, to Mickey Arison. He was a free agent. Cleveland made an offer. Miami made an offer. He decided to go to Cleveland. End of story.
Yeah, and then I'll give Dan a plug. You know, I don't like plugging other shows on our show, but if you really want to hear some interesting insight about this whole story, I'd say go back the last week and listen to Le Batard's radio show.
Yeah.
You can find it on Stitcher, and Bomani Jones is on there a couple times. And it's interesting just the zeitgeist that's going on down there in Miami. And I think Dan has a way of addressing fans' concerns, but also kind of stepping back and saying, you know, this is a guy that just wanted to go home. This is a guy that not only gets to go home, gets paid handsomely for it, but he also gets power that he wouldn't have been able to have here in Miami with Pat Riley and Mickey Arison and those cats, you know, running the show.
And they still have a good team. Let's focus on the current Miami Heat team and not worry about,
like, don't forget about me, guys.
Yeah, I think we'll see a new Chris Bosh. We'll see more of a Toronto Raptors Chris Bosh than this season Chris Bosh, who turned into just a jump shooter. Let's not forget that.
If you can add that Toronto Raptors Chris Bosh, but add the three-point shot that he's kind of developed the last 4 years, you've got, you know, a guy that's a top-10 player again.
Yeah, I mean, let's not remember his last season in Toronto. He averaged 24 points and almost 11 rebounds a game. So, but we'll see more of that Chris Bosh this year, Let's not sleep on Chris. And Wade's a question mark. I mean, if he's only playing 50 games next year, then they could be in trouble. But if he can try to find a way to get through the regular season, then they'll be fine.
Yeah, you better have a hell of a backup.
At shooting guard, I don't even know who their backup would be at the moment.
We mentioned Toronto, and we did get some listener feedback on the Kings of Sport Facebook page, facebook.com/Kings of Sport. A friend of the program, Steve Kassan from Toronto, left his thoughts about LeBron, and he said, "It's all a big joke. I don't know what legacy he's carving out for himself, as this is truly the selfish era of the NBA. Back in the day, players stuck with teams and built legacies and won championships. LeBron has all the tools. He is the evolution of basketball with his size, speed, agility, and ability. However, his selfishness and media attention has diminished it. Tim Duncan is greater than LeBron James."
Oh, jeez. Steve. You can't compare apples and oranges from what the guys did in the 90s to now. It's just, it's a whole different ballgame from a financial standpoint. And let's not forget, this whole process of moving around and chasing titles, it started, you could point the finger in the early 90s or mid-90s when Barkley was going around trying to get a ring, Drexler was going around trying to get a ring. You had all these legends who, towards the end of their career, Ewing, they all popped up on different teams, Malone, Scottie Payton, Pippen. You know, if you can point the finger at them, you know, as for comparing, you know, what Duncan's doing in San Antonio, yeah, kudos to him for staying in San Antonio. You know, but I don't get all the negative hate for LeBron in general, but especially for a situation like this where he's going back to Cleveland. And we're not talking about a powerhouse in the Cavs. We're talking about a young team that, you know, if they win 50 games, that'll be impressive, because the team he left 4 years ago in Cleveland is probably better on paper than his team now, because they at least had some veterans and some guys who've been in the playoffs. But Kyrie, none of these guys have had playoff experience. So when May and if June rolls around, then we'll see how good this team actually is compared to what people think it is.
Yeah, and I think this team is going to probably top out around 40, 45 wins maybe.
Oh, no, that's 500. They'll be better than 500. 41 and 41 is 500. That they're better than that.
Yeah. I wouldn't go any higher than 50, though. I don't think I'd go any higher than 50 games with this team as it's currently constructed, you know, assuming they don't get Kevin Love.
They won 33 last year without LeBron, so... Yeah, I think between...
I can see 50 wins and there'd be a fourth or fifth seed in the East.
Who wins more games? The Cleveland Cavaliers or the Washington Wizards?
Oof. That's another young team.
That has quietly had a good offseason and adding some key pieces like Paul Pierce.
And they've had you know, in terms of playoff experience, postseason experience, they've got more than this current Cavs team outside of LeBron.
Yeah.
Right now, my top four would be Indiana, in no particular order. I'm just kind of going off the top of the head. Indiana, Chicago. I think I might give Brooklyn and Lionel Hollins the benefit of the doubt, put them in the top four, and Miami. And then I'd say Cleveland would probably be my fifth team. And I think Cleveland's going to edge out Washington. Washington will probably be around that fifth or sixth seed. But I think the difference between the number one seed in the East and number five, it's going to be close.
And don't sleep on Charlotte, by the way. We didn't mention today's signing with Charlotte, with Lance Stephenson going to the Hornets. But that's also a team now that quietly has a sneaky good little team there with Jefferson and Stephenson.
And if anybody get that man's head screwed on straight, it's Michael Jordan.
Yeah, let Jordan work for that. Yeah, I mean, well, if Bird didn't do it, you know. But He's going from Larry Bird to Michael Jordan. Not bad front office. Yeah.
I was gonna say, no disrespect to Larry Bird, but I think Mike might have a little bit more, like, Mike still thinks he can fight.
Yeah.
Like, don't let the wingtips fool you. Like, I think Mike would, like, have him jacked up against the locker. Hey, man. And he's got a Charles Oakley as his muscle. Yeah, so going back to what Steve said in terms of the media real quick, I think that LeBron is in a no-win situation where, you know, it's like we've never had a guy, a athlete with this much power. Either way he does things, it's going to be a bad look in some people's eyes, like the decision raised $3 million for the Boys and Girls Club, and, you know, he got killed for it. Mm-hmm. I would have done it, but, you know, he took a lot of heat, and I think ESPN kind of skated on it. In terms of, it reminded me of, what was it, the Super Bowl, what was it, 35 with Janet Jackson?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody crushed Janet for that titty, but Justin Timberlake, you know, he got like a slap on the wrist. And I think LeBron and ESPN were in the same type of situation. This time around, he went to Sports Illustrated, the most respected publication in the history of sports, you know, in this country, and had a beautiful letter. I don't know how much LeBron wrote and how much was, you know, the SI contribution. But, you know, it was a very well thought out letter, and it said some really great things about the Heat organization and Riley and all those people. And it's like people are crushing him because he didn't let Riley know before he wrote the letter that he was going to leave. It's like, come on, man. It's business.
It's just nitpicking at this point. Yeah, he handled it well. And Miami handled it well. They didn't have a Dan Gilbert moment when he left. So both sides handled this thing pretty well.
Yeah, everybody except for Shabazz Napier, who unfollowed yeah. LeBron. Man, we ain't friends no more, LeBron.
Rookie.
So that's the A block, the big news in Cleveland. Again, we're going to have some fun this NBA season, I believe. A lot of movement, and I don't think it's done. Not by a long shot. There's still some big names that are going to be looking for new homes, and it's just a matter of whether that will happen at the trade deadline or whether it happens after the season.
Yeah, should be. And just in case Brazil needs any more excitement, the first meeting between Miami and Cleveland is in the preseason in October in Brazil, Rio de Janeiro. So that should be fun.
Yeah, it's a bit of a homecoming for Varejão.
Yes, that's a good point.
He may be even more popular than LeBron that game.
He might be.
Look, I want to see everybody out there with Anderson Varejão wigs.
If it is this LeBron guy, Anderson came back.
Yeah. Like, whoever is the hustle man in Brazil, like, he needs to start printing out or manufacturing those wigs right now.
I wish Varejão was sitting up just to be Varejão, and he needs to drop Anderson. He's not on that Nene level.
Yeah, he's not on the Nene level.
No.
That's the A block. Coming up next, though, it's the return. Again, we're doing this on a week-to-week basis, folks. The return of the Ringside Rap, where we'll talk about race in pro wrestling and also the WWE debut of the man called Sting.
Quote, unquote.
Stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after this.
Going on here. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com. Yeah.
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
We are back on the Kings of Sport podcast. Marcus and Nate holding things down, and it is time for the return of the Ringside Wrap. You know, we told you we'd only do this segment when there was noteworthy or newsworthy items in the world of pro wrestling, and we have two such topics this week. One that is fun, and one that may get a little too real for some of y'all fans out there, but if any show is going to talk about this topic, it is going to be ours. And so without any further ado, Brother Marcus, why don't you let the people know what our first topic is this week on the Ringside Wrap?
Yeah, so if you listen to the show, when we've discussed wrestling a lot of times, it comes back to race. And it's not just because we're bitter black people. It's just sometimes it's obvious for
I mean, that us. Is part of it, though. That is part
Speak for yourself. but finally, someone else decided to point out the issues we've been discussing, and Dion Barry for the Atlanta wrote a piece that was titled "Pro Wrestling is Fate, but its race problem isn't." And the subhead is "Don't Laugh. WWE has been trying to show some social consciousness lately, so why does it still insist on making its minority wrestlers into drill wearing thuggish B-listers?" And essentially, the story touches on why the black roster continues to shuck and jive and job while the rest of the white roster always tends to benefit as a whole. And there is one part of the story that I thought was a little misleading when he was discussing The Rock. The Rock, and he was talking about the company not having a black champion. And, you know, this comes back down to an issue with race and what do you, you know, define as black. And in my eyes, whether he wants to agree with it or not, The Rock is black because his father's black. And if we're going to claim Obama as president, as the first black president, then hell, The Rock is the first black WWE champion. So you can argue semantics and, you know, whether a Canadian who's black is really black enough. But I think that's the only misstep in the story. But otherwise, it was a good look at sort of detailing what the history of race and the WWE has been like. And we sort of touched on Booker T's run in the WWE and what that meant for the company. And what were your thoughts on the story as a whole?
Yeah, I thought it was a great piece. Real quick on The Rock thing, I did have an issue with that as well. You know, The Rock, you know, is the first black WWF champion. And I know that some folks may say that he doesn't really identify as much with his black side as his Samoan side. But if I were The Rock, I'd identify with my Samoan side too, especially in wrestling. It's just more, it's just more interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You like, just look at the family tree and the lineage of all of those wrestlers, you know, and it, you know, I'd identify more with that side of my culture too, my heritage too. But that's not to say that he's ever said, you know, I'm not black, or, you know, I don't want to be associated with the black community.
Or
you know,
his father, never, anything like that. Yeah, no.
Right. He's never done that. So I consider The Rock, you know, a black world champion, but I don't think that he should be held up as an example of the WWE's tolerance, because if you didn't make The Rock world champion as hot as he was, probably hotter than almost any other wrestler, maybe outside of Hulk Hogan in the 80s, then you're just an idiot. That's just bad business. So, you know, I don't have a problem with The Rock being held up as an example of a black champion. It's just like, where's the rest? Where's everybody else? You know, when you've got a company that had a black performer as recently as, you know, a year ago, get on live national TV and say, I was born to shuck and jive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like white wrestlers don't do stupid things. I mean, we've seen Damian Sandow for the past month, but the percentage of the white performers that are treated as jokes and stereotypes compared to the percentage of black performers that got to come out and dance and rap and sing and crack jokes and shuck and jive and be thugs. It is preposterous, in my opinion.
And their stereotypes are a little different. What Sandow is doing is not a stereotype on a specific race. Santino is someone who is a stereotype of a specific race. He's not even Italian. He's a Canadian. So, yeah, stuff like Santino, yeah, that you can make the point that, okay, what they're doing there is, you know, equally as offensive. But for someone like Sandow who's impersonating other wrestlers of different backgrounds, that's a little different than having someone like Big E going out and you know, trying to speak like a preacher or just doing stuff that's just detrimental to the race itself.
And it's different than having somebody who legit has a PhD in Xavier Woods and turning him into Lionel Richie Light.
Yeah, that too.
And another point that the article makes up, that points out, which is something we've talked about for a while, is there have been black world champions in the WWE, whether you're talking about Mark Henry, Booker T, Bobby Lashley was the ECW world champion, but these titles have always been looked at by the company and by the fans as secondary titles. Outside of The Rock, you've never had a black man hold the company's most prestigious belt.
And I thought for sure Mark Henry was going to get his opportunity to do that. And I was hoping he would. That was, what, a couple years ago?
Yeah, when he did the fake retirement speech.
I think before then, when he had he was just destroying people with the gold belt.
Oh, with the Hall of Pain?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and he got hurt, I believe, and that's what sort of derailed that. But that was, I mean, outside of that Mark Henry run, I couldn't tell you the last real. I mean, it's even rare when a black wrestler is fighting for the title outside of R-Truth, which was a joke, and Mark Henry.
And the R-Truth character, the R-Truth heel character was pretty interesting because they took the stereotypes and they kind of flipped it on his head.
Yeah.
And it was like, this is a character that could have been really interesting, but all he was basically, you know, fodder for John Cena for a month.
And situation like that, if he were to win the title, it would have failed, and rightfully so, because he had no reason to win the title, to be honest. But, you know, the fact that a lot of these guys don't even get the opportunity. Someone like Kofi Kingston has been in the company for years now and has always been a great performer. He's never come close to sniffing the world title. He's sort of been stuck in that glass ceiling of intercontinental title, and that's about it for him. So, you know, I don't know if that reflects on the current talent or the talent they're recruiting, or what, or if it comes down to just the storylines that these guys are given, but something needs to change.
Right, and I think a big part of it is, you know, the writing room. The creative team is, you know, Court Barron mentioned when we had him on last year, you know, the writing room is pretty monochromatic. You know, it's mainly white guys in their, you know, late 30s to, you know, 50s, and they are writing for characters that, you know, Hispanic characters or female characters or black characters that they really don't have a point of reference for, which is why so often we see them turn to stereotypes.
Yeah.
Like, why in the hell did, like, you know, just some examples, why in the hell did the Mexicos have to come out on lawnmowers? Like, who let that slide in the writing room? Like, who thought that was a good idea?
You know, I would like to see, and it might be jarring for some people at first, but I don't see a problem with the company having a quote-unquote black writer for black storylines or a Hispanic writer for Hispanic storylines to at least have some fair and balanced agendas in the room, because clearly what they're doing now is not working.
And it's not just one or two incidents. I mean, you can go talk about Booker T's feud with Triple H, in which the racist won. You could talk about when Orton was feuding with Kofi and he made that had that promo about MVP, who's it, Mark Henry and Kofi Kingston don't belong in the WWE, they belong back in the hood.
Yeah.
Never mind the fact that, you know, Kofi and Mark Henry in real life never did any dirt. You know what I mean? MVP, yes, he's got a background, he's got a record, but the other two guys are like, they grew up in middle class area.
Kofi graduated from Boston College, by the way.
Yeah,
a lot sharper than Randy Orton.
who was pissing and crapping in people's bags.
Discharged from the military, so.
Yeah. And then the other thing with black workers is that they are never, and I got into this argument with somebody on Facebook the other day. You know, it's like, they're like, well, what's the problem? It's a fake sport. And I'm like, you know, fake sport perhaps, but it's simulating a real sport. It's, you know, you've got writers and you've got the talent trying to get across that this is real. What we're watching on TV is real, even though we know that it's scripted. And it's like, if this is mimicking real sports, why are all of your top guys, for the most part, white? Like, any sport, UFC, tennis, boxing, basketball, your top guys are probably going to be a mixture of people from all different races and backgrounds, and that's not the case with the WWE.
And you're talking about kids. Kids are very impressionable at these ages, and when you're feeding kids this information that, oh, well, all the black wrestlers have to dance or sing or do whatever, then you're raising a generation, you know, yes, the parents should be doing a better job of raising these kids, but a lot of these kids are raised on television, and a lot of these kids are raised watching wrestling, and it's sending an incorrect message to the young kids.
Funny story, when I went to that WWE live event last year, there was a match on the card, and it featured the primetime players versus Biggie Langston and may have been Dolph Ziggler.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point in the match, you know, of course, they go to Biggie Langston and Titus O'Neil. And the kid, the little white kids behind me are talking with their dad. And he's trying to explain who all the characters are and whatnot. And the kid goes, I want the black one to win. And the dad's like, well, there's three black guys in the ring. And he's like, no, I want the funny black guy, not the mean, serious black guy.
Big E?
Right. He's like, I don't want Big E. I want the guys, Titus and Aaron, that come out with the whistles and doing the dances and all that other stuff. He's like, I want the funny black guys to win.
Oh, boy.
And I'm just, I kind of turn around because it's funny to me. And then the dad just kind of looks at me. He's like, what are you going to do? I'm like, it's not your fault. It's Vince McMahon's fault.
He did get a pass.
The kid can only react to what he's been fed.
Yeah, and that's true. That's true.
So I don't think this is something that's going to change. I think it's going to take, and I thought it would have been Big E, but it's going to take a guy like The Rock that is just transcendent to, I think, get close to that world title.
I don't see anyone in NXT currently who can make that next step, but I don't.
On the like, this is the crazy thing. If Roman Reigns were about four shades darker, I don't think he'd be in the position that he's in.
No, because I think he still has the. He'd be The Rock. I mean,
well,
darker than The Rock.
Let me rephrase that. If Roman Reigns were a black guy in the Shield with no connection to the Samoan heritage, he wouldn't be in this position. You know, same physical attributes, same, you know, physique or whatever the top guys like. You know, but he, instead of being Samoan, he's black. He's Ricky Reigns instead of Roman Reigns.
I have to agree with you, I think. Yeah, you have a point.
Because basically he'd be Big E at that point.
Yeah, minus the heritage and all that stuff, yeah.
So that's disheartening, but it is what it is.
Well, I mean, SummerSlam is coming up soon, and the last 12 years I've had a chance to get some interviews, so maybe I have a topic this year to discuss with my buddy Paul Levesque. Last year we were discussing PEDs and stuff, so.
You're about to end up on some list.
Yeah.
Don't let Vanderberg in. I thought he was cool because he was light skinned, but he keeps ambushing me. Oh, but yeah, so that's a racial aspect of the WWE. But let's go. Let's talk about something happy to end off the ringside rap, Marcus. That was the return in Richmond. of the man called Sting.
He's back.
In video game form.
Yeah.
So those of you that haven't seen, it was a commercial for the WWE 2K15, which, first of all, I thought it was a pretty cool commercial.
Very cool commercial. And like, they shot it pretty recently, too.
Yeah, because they had that thing, what was it, a variety, where they were looking for Sting body doubles and musicians. Yeah, so basically, you know, you had Sting come down from the rafters. He looks at the camera, two generations of Sting if you pre-order WWE 2K15. So I'm assuming you're getting the surfer guy and you're also getting the crow Sting. And it leads me to believe that the mode this year, you know, like it's been the Attitude Era, it's been the 30 years of WrestleMania mode. We might get a Monday Night Wars mode this year.
Which could be fun because a lot of those guys were in both companies, so the big holdout would be, you know, Sting, of course, that he's never wrestled WWE, but a lot of those guys went back and forth, so in terms of trying to get their licenses and rights, it should be pretty easy to do.
Yeah, like, that's a hell of a selling point, especially when you talk about, like, the network's key demographic is probably older viewers. Like, if you tell me on this video game, for the first time, I get to play the Starrcade match with Sting and Hogan. Like, that's a pretty cool little hook.
Yeah.
And I'm actually, like, I haven't bought a WWE game in about 5 years, and I'm actually considering pre-ordering this. Like, so they've already sold me on this thing.
So they did a better job on this than the network in one night.
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe if the network had more Sting.
Yeah, that's. I think sooner than later, I think we're going to start getting a lot of Sting between now and October.
Yeah, so which leads me to something that I've been thinking about, Marcus. Because, you know, a lot of people have been saying, how do you bring Sting in? What's the right way to bring Sting in? You know, who is he going to fight? Is he going to fight The Undertaker, this and that? And I got something I'd like to run by you.
Okay.
This is my thoughts on how I would bring Sting in. You know, I think you can get two matches out of Sting, and this is how I'd play it. You got a big angle right now with Bray Wyatt, a favorite of the show, and Chris Jericho. I think Wyatt's going to go over Jericho. And the theme to the guys that he's faced recently are that they are heroes. You had John Cena, the WWE Universe hero favorite for the kids. You got Chris Jericho, this rock star from the Attitude Era. And then I think, you know, you have Bray Wyatt come out saying there's no more heroes, there's no more rock stars, there's no more icons. Lights go out, lights come up, Sting. Doesn't say anything, just, you know, that's... Or you can even have him in the rafters, like just making that visual connection between Bray Wyatt and Sting. You have that match at the Royal Rumble. Next year's Royal Rumble.
Okay.
Sting wins that match. In the process, though, in between that, you have Sting doing mind tricks with Bray Wyatt. Like, you know how they always do the lights with the Wyatts when they come in and ambush somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say one week it's Sting out there and the lights go out, lights come back on, the Wyatts are in the ring. Then the lights go out, the lights come back on, Sting's gone. And the Wyatts are like, where the hell does this dude go? Or you have a bunch of Stings come out from the crowd and the Wyatts beat him up. And then it turns out that Sting is, which one is it, Harper or Rowan that wears the sheet mask?
I think Rowan does.
It turns out Sting beat up Rowan already and he's been in the sheet mask the whole segment. And he beats up Bray Wyatt. Just do stuff like that. And Sting wins at the Royal Rumble, but the Wyatts come out at the end. They beat him down. Lights go out. Lights come back on. Undertaker.
Vampiro. No?
Vampiro. Vampiro was booked that week.
Damn. All right.
So you get Undertaker, and instead of having Undertaker versus Sting, which I think, you know, is lusters off, the shines off that rose, at WrestleMania you have last time Sting and Taker versus the Wyatt family.
Hmm.
And then that's the last match for both guys, and that's it. They raid right off into the sunset. The WWE's icon and the WCW's icon. Boom. That's it.
I wasn't told until you mentioned the last match for each guys, and then that sold me. So the timing, I don't know how they would do it between now and the Rumble with him. They would have to find something for Bray Wyatt to do between September and the winter time.
Let's just keep bringing back old guys for him to beat.
That's true. Yeah. That could work too. But the idea of Taker and Sting, who, I don't know their personal relationship, if they're friends or friendly or what. I'm sure they are. But yeah, that's not a bad angle. The only thing that, would you want the Wyatt, Harper and Rowan sort of in that situation, or would you try to work in Bray Wyatt somehow in that match, the final match?
Oh, I'd make it 3-on-2.
Oh, okay.
I'd make it 3-on-2 with and basically the Wyatt would kind of, the whole story of the match would be Wyatt would be trying to avoid getting in there with those guys, and Harper and Rowan kind of taking most of the offense from Sting and Taker, and then they end up winning. Finally, they get their hands on Bray Wyatt. You get a Stinger Splash, which leads into a Last Ride.
Okay, yeah.
Out of there. And the match doesn't even have to be that long, 7 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the entrances alone would be 10 minutes by themselves, between the two of them. Taker, we have not heard from, seen from, nothing since Mania.
And I think, there's a tricky situation where, if you were going to do that Sting-Taker match, you don't want Taker to lose two Manias in a row, and you don't want Sting to lose, in what would be his only WrestleMania match.
I mean, I don't think you want Taker wrestling, period, if you don't have to at this point, but at least a tag match, you can try to hide him.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do his crazy spots. All he has to do is get in, throw some clotheslines, do a choke slam, and then hit the Last Ride.
This is some creative fantasy booking here.
I'd send an application into the WWE, but I don't know if they take me after what we talked about in the first part of the segment.
Probably not. Plus black, too.
Maybe I can use S. John Pollock, if I can use his picture. Use his profile picture as my alias.
You think John Pollock's on their good list, too? I don't know. He's out there pirating WCW Nitro episodes. Who knows?
Probably not, yeah. After stealing Russo-era WCW Nitro episodes.
TNA employee Vince Russo?
Yes. He came out and told the truth, which is what you always expect from Vince Russo.
Yeah, so that's not a bad idea. Will it happen? I'm still not convinced.
I think in that situation, that's something that could, obviously you're going to have him go over Bray Wyatt, but I think he gets a rub at least by working with those guys.
I'm still not convinced we see Sting wrestle, though. That's a problem. Ever. I think they'll probably, they can follow the formula similar to Warrior and just have him around, but
the difference with Warrior and Sting, though, is we had seen Warrior in the WWE. We never have seen Sting wrestle. I think he's got to get at least one match.
If he didn't do one, then,
and that's why I'm saying, I think he's got two good matches in them, a couple months apart, one's a tag match, and that's it. Then you do the DVDs and all this other stuff and really push him as part of the quote-unquote WWE universe, even though he's only wrestled two matches.
But if you're actually going to do just one match, then you would think it would be, if not counting Taker, because he can't go, you would think it would be Cena, right?
Cena?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that could be another option if
there's your heel turn.
It's seen as out of the title picture.
Yeah, which he should be. Because you figured Lesnar's going to have the belt, so.
Yeah. So that'd be two, but you think they're going to give Cena two L's back-to-back?
Where, man?
Cena beats Sting. Then again, that may be the best thing for him as a
heel. That might be the best thing to sort of get his character refreshing, is to beat this icon and, retire Sting and just go from there. But I don't see Cena in the main event at WrestleMania, so why not have him paired with the Nets best then?
That's not bad. That's not bad. I still like mine better, though.
No, that's...
Like, yours is probably more likely to happen, though.
More logical, probably, because I just can't see him doing more than one match, if that, so... And the timing, too. I think it's gotta be... You gotta save it for Mania, because... I know they're trying to push the network, but if you're doing Sting anywhere else besides the network in his first match, then that's not a good sign for the company.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting though, because there's still a chance that the Big Four or the Big Three could go back to traditional pay per view.
The pay per views, yeah,
because the network business hadn't been doing too hot.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get a better idea in a couple of weeks when they release the updated numbers, but until then, we don't know what the numbers are since WrestleMania. I'm sure it's gone up since then.
Oh, Marcus, I just had a thought, though.
Uh-huh.
You know what we're going to get? Who on the WWE's board of leadership is a Sting Mark and Lux?
Oh, no. No.
Sting, Triple H, damn WrestleMania, it. Damn it.
Even he wouldn't do that, right? Get a chance to wrestle his idol.
And he's gonna go over Sting. He's like, this is for Vader all those years ago when I was a kid watching Saturday Night. I could see Sting and Triple H. I don't want to see Sting Triple H, but I could see that match being made.
No. I'm sure we got a terrorizing Sting match on WWE Saturday Night back in the day. I'm sure there's one out there. He's done it before.
he's been waiting 20 years for his receipt.
The rematch from the soundstage at the MGM. Terrorizing Sting. 605.
That soundstage still exists, doesn't it?
It does. It's still out there. It's still out there in Disney World.
Yeah, maybe it'll be like that one WrestleMania where they were in Chicago. Was it Chicago and L.A.?
The split, yeah.
They'll have most of the card in the Bay Area, and then the Sting Triple H match will take place in that soundstage.
Soundstage with the doors.
In the arena match. Yeah. I was feeling good about Sting coming back until now. I'm like, yeah. Triple H could screw this whole deal up.
He could. He's been known to do that.
Yeah. Now I need something to cheer me up, so I'm going to get out of here, and we're going to get ready for segment four. So hopefully we can end the show on a positive note, Marcus.
I think so.
Yeah. So, more Kings of Sport right after this.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. PlaceToBeNation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best and comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. Want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport podcast, powered by Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com is your one-stop spot for the latest and greatest in the world of sports and pop culture. And do not forget to check out the World Cup of Television, which is still ongoing. Some great matchups. Place to Be Nation doing a tournament of all-time television characters and personalities, including one group where Fred Rogers is taking on Fred Sanford. How you like that matchup, Marcus?
Fred Sanford.
You picking Fred Sanford?
Yep. Beat up dummy.
That'd be a great fight, though. But my name is Fred G. Sanford, and the G stands for gonna get you. But yeah, you can go there, cast your vote right now at PlaceToBeNation.com while you're there. Check out the great articles, shows, and columns on that website, PlaceToBeNation.com. Now, it is time for the segment you guys wait for each and every week, one of the most popular segments on the show, and that is segment four, where we take a look at ratchetness in the world of sports, pop culture, and we just throw everything in a pot, make some ratchet gumbo, and serve it up to you. And this week's segment four is brought to you by the letter M for misogyny, Marcus.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not a good week for women and what us males think about them. Starting with Floyd Mayweather, who is promoting his upcoming rematch with Marcos Maidana in September, and he was captured on video this week during a press roundtable where the question, he was discussing opponents, and the question of Ronda Rousey came up, and Floyd Mayweather, with a straight face, said, I don't know who he is, in reference to Ronda Rousey. And you can hear his PR person in the background, Kelly Swanson, sort of say, you know, Ronda Rousey, UFC, Dana White. And Mayweather again follow up and said, hey, I don't know who that is. And you know, how do you not know who Ronda Rousey is when she fights in your backyard? Floyd is a resident of Las Vegas. The UFC is based in Las Vegas. It's hard not to see Ronda Rousey during a fight week, you know, plastered on the side of a hotel or a billboard. So I don't know if he was just joking or if he was just, you know, out of it, caught off guard or what. But the fact that you're calling Ronda Rousey a male is bad enough. But the fact that you don't even know who the biggest face of your competition in the UFC is, that's another sign that's not good.
Yeah, I don't know what Floyd was attempting to accomplish with that answer. I mean, you know, we've heard the bogus pipe dream of a fight between Ronda and Floyd, and Dana White, troll that he is, saying that Ronda would win the fight easily and hurt Floyd. You know, it's all fun and games, but this seems, you know, it's one thing to dismiss somebody, but, you know, he could have just said, hey, you know, I don't watch MMA, you know, I've heard the name, but I don't know who she is. But to be like, I don't know who that dude is.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And that's, you know, it's a line of disrespect, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, Floyd didn't need to go there, because as big a star as Ronda is, Floyd is twice that, and it's like, you know, you never punch down.
Yeah. Especially now with a woman, and well, punching in.
Yeah, you never punch down, well, especially not on a woman. Well, that should be the bumper sticker.
That we're talking about Floyd Mayweather, so you know. he's at practice doing that, but
oh.
Yeah, it's very odd. Potato said, hey, you know, my bad. I didn't know you're talking about a woman. And he could have corrected himself the second time, but the fact that he followed up and stuck by his original answer was just very disrespectful to Ronda Rousey. And knowing Ronda, she will have a response sooner than later.
It's like, come on, man. How many guys you know named Ronda?
Yeah, zero.
I could easily see if somebody said, do you know who Dana White is? Like, I don't know who she is.
Yeah.
That, you can make that mistake, yeah. But I don't know any dudes named Ronda.
Yeah, none that are fighting. That's for sure.
Then again, if you're a dude and your name is Ronda, you probably
have to be a lot of fights, yeah.
Oh, man. But yeah, there's a lot in this, just this really quick interview that was just interesting to me. And it's like, you think, you made the point earlier about, you know, all this occurring in Vegas, which, you know, is Floyd's town. And it's like, you would think, granted, boxing and MMA have a bit of a rivalry, but Floyd, to me, is bigger than boxing. You would think that he would find some way to make money off of the UFC. Not saying he would fight in the UFC, but you think that Floyd would find a way to capitalize on this sport.
I don't know. Because I think if you wanted to really, you know, capitalize off of a secondary sport, he'd go back to WWE and try to do something there.
Yeah, you're right. But then again, we know how they treat black guys.
Yeah, I mean. But he knocked out the Big Show. They got Floyd over in WrestleMania. That's more than a lot of black wrestlers can say.
Yeah, he did. He at least had a WrestleMania moment.
And legit broke his nose. So, yeah, speaking of Floyd, I don't know if we discussed last week about his rematch with Maidana, but also today's news that Manny Pacquiao is fighting in November against Chris Algieri, and I'm sure you're doing Chris who? And that's the appropriate response to that, because Chris Algieri is someone who wasn't...
I don't know who she is.
Yeah, there you go. Algieri is someone who wasn't on the national scene prior to early this summer. So what do you make to these two, I don't want to call them lackluster matches, because I think the Mayweather rematch could be intriguing, but, you know, the fans still want the ideal Pacquiao-Mayweather matchup, and we're not any closer to getting to that point.
No, we're not, and these just seem like placeholders. You know, the Maidana fight is a little bit more interesting, especially with, you know, the comments that both guys have made in the aftermath of the fight, so I'm more intrigued with that. The Pacquiao fight, I'm not going to watch it. I mean, Pacquiao's still a name, but unless he's in there with somebody that I care about, I don't care about Pacquiao.
Yeah, and he's going back to China, which is not going to help pay-per-view sales, even though they're going to do the same situation before, but they're going to fight early in the morning in Macau, so it'll be prime time here. But Algeri is a guy who came on the scene after defeating Ruslan Provodnikov.
That's got to be crazy too. Like, man, like, you, we gonna fight at 8 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, that's tough. That's just those undercard fights start in the middle of the morning, and you have to adjust your training to fight at that time of the day. You have to adjust your diet. You have to adjust everything to fight.
I'm gonna wake up, eat some Fruit Loops, and go whoop somebody's ass.
Yeah, be done by noon. So I don't. Don't hold your breath for that Pacquiao Mayweather fight. I know
I'm almost giving up on that fight. But I'm more intrigued in, will we ever see the Hopkins Floyd fight now?
I still think we will see that one day. Retirement match, similar to your Undertaker Sting idea.
Yeah,
I think both guys will.
But the lights come out, the lights come back up, and it's Bernard Hopkins with the executioner robe.
Yeah, both guys will retire each other essentially and fight to open that new arena that opened in Las Vegas.
And what, Floyd's got two more fights on his contract?
Two or three. I believe he has two. He's got May and next September, I believe. But he can always, you know, like Lesnar, he can always extend that deal, I'm sure,
yeah,
for a one-off.
Yeah, so good on you, Floyd. I know you got to make your money and promote, but let's be a little bit kinder to the ladies.
Hopefully.
Speaking of which.
Yeah. This guy wasn't too kind to the ladies. Are you familiar with the Dennis and Callahan Morning Show?
Never heard of it.
Yeah, so WEEI in Boston is like the big sports talk radio station up there, and they've been around for a long, long time, and this isn't the first time making headlines, but one of the co-hosts, Kirk Minahan, was on the show this morning, and he was discussing Aaron Andrews' interview from the All-Star Game last night with Adam Wainwright, and he took offense to, I guess, Aaron Andrews' follow-up comment after Wainwright's statement when he was talking about grouping pitches to Derek Jeter. And if you haven't heard of this audio yet, you should search out the audio from today's show, but I'll read his response to his thoughts on Aaron Andrews' interview. Quote, "What a bitch. I hate her. What a gutless bitch. Seriously, go away. Drop dead. I mean, seriously, what the hell is wrong with her? First of all, follow up. Second of all, the guy admitted he did it. He admitted it. He told reporters he threw a couple of pipe bombs. How is that social media's fault? I hate her. I seriously hate her so much. Social media is the reason she has a big house. Shut up. Shut up. I shouldn't call her a bitch. I'm sure she's a nice person." And then one of the other hosts added, "She's probably a bitch." So.
Wow.
Talk radio, boys and girls. Talk radio.
Now, we've talked at length about my feelings about Aaron Andrews. I'm not her biggest fan. But, again, this guy went above and beyond the call of duty.
Yeah, I mean, if you
feel, I don't know how much is genuine feeling and how much is, I know this is going to get me some national publicity.
I think this was genuine. I don't think these guys were even trying to. I think this is what they really thought, and they just said it. This wasn't orchestrated to me, which is even more disturbing.
Yeah, what did you make of? Of the Wainwright dust up.
You know, we discussed earlier, but I had an issue with them doing this interview during the game. I thought this could have waited until after the game. It wasn't that serious that they needed to. I'm not sure where the whole social media demanded that they talk to Wainwright during the game, but it would have been better served following the game, not during the game. And you know, it puts Aaron Andrews in another awkward situation again, similar to with the Richard Sherman stuff. Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, how the interview came about or, you know, what she was being told in terms of what to ask, but just not timing. Time is everything. Not the best time to do this interview. And yes, it does impact the World Series, but at the end of the day, we're talking about an exhibition game, and if you wanted to group a pitch to Jeter, then so be it.
Yeah, and you know, like we mentioned earlier, it's a shame that the seriousness, quote unquote, of the game was overtaking the fun. But I think a lot is being made of this, and it's just a tempest in a teapot. My bigger issue involving an Aaron Andrews story from the past week is this: she taking Pam Oliver's job, man.
Yeah.
Pam, like, this is some Riggs and Murtaugh type stuff. Like, Pam Oliver was 1 year away from getting 20 years on the number one team as Fox Sports sideline reporter in the NFL. And it's like,
she's also 1 year from AARP. She's pushing 55, right? She's getting up there.
Yeah, she's 54, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she's like, I'm 1 day away from retirement. And then all of a sudden, here comes this blonde hurricane tornado that just blows out of the water.
Hey, I mean, 53 trumps 32 I've ever wrote Aaron Andrews is. And listen, if Pam had those wigs and weaves on point. I mean, that's what she was towards the last season. What did people talk about with Pam Oliver? Her hair. They never talked about her talent. They always talked about her presentation. So,
you think it's going to be any different with Aaron, though? Like, that's all we're going to be talking about with her?
People don't talk about her outfits or Aunt Andrew's hair.
The most things that get commented, much like this story, the Richard Sherman story, is she looked uncomfortable in that issue or in that interview. She looked scared in that interview. Like, it's all this stuff about how is Aaron feeling. It's never about the actual football or baseball or whatever the sport is.
I think that's I don't say it's most women, because there are women who go unnoticed, like Michelle Tafoya, who just do their jobs. But
where's Leslie Visser, man?
Yeah,
we need more Leslie Vissers and Armin Katayans, man. That's when sideline reporting was amazing.
Yeah, but I mean, women are there. We're more critical towards women. If that was Ken Rosenthal in that spot last night, no one would care. No one would care if he followed up with social media. But because it's a woman, we feel the need to point out every mistake and every flub or every what we consider a mistake in our eyes. So it just puts women in general in a tough spot to do this job.
Yeah, and it's like we talked about my issues with Aaron Andrews, but I'm like, if you want to get younger, cool, but I think you're getting younger but you're not getting better. Like, there's plenty of blonde, blue-eyed girls out there that do a better job at what they do than Aaron Andrews.
But we should not Aaron Andrews for doing whatever she did to put herself in that position, because that's just part of the game. Those other girls who are more talented should find a way to find out what she's doing.
As much as I dislike Michelle Beadle on a personal level, I think she's a better broadcaster. Carissa Thompson, Renee Paquette. Like, there's better blondes out there.
But, does Renee Paquette know NFL better than Aaron Andrews? I'm guessing not. I don't know.
Probably not.
Yeah. So there's something she's doing that is putting herself in situations to succeed. And, we don't always have the most talented people in front of us, but, the ones who know how to, play the game and advance are the ones who usually benefit from stuff like this.
It's like, damn it, Triple H is right. It is all about the game.
It is.
And how you play it. I just think it's sad that we live in a world where Tony Siragusa is pretty enough for the sidelines, but Pam isn't.
She's still working. She didn't lose her job. She's just the number two.
She got put on the B team with. Like, you didn't go from covering the number one games, getting the good food. Now you're in the B team. You get Popeye's box lunches.
And to be fair, she's okay. She sounds okay with it. I mean, she said, just turn on your TV. It's everywhere. And I'm not saying these younger girls don't deserve a chance. I know I've had my turn. I think she knows. I mean, at some point, you don't see many women over a certain age on television, unfortunately.
That's why I like Tafoya on NBC. Like, there's something about an older woman. It's like there's credibility there. Granted, we're not going to sideline reporters for world news, but there's just something about somebody that's a grizzled veteran, quote unquote.
Yeah, but at some point, no matter, male or female, and Pam Oliver doesn't look 53 and she is not at that age yet, but there's got to be a cutoff, I think, in terms of doing what you do on camera, in terms of in that type of role. I think you can be a play-by-play broadcaster, someone like Jay Musburger, well into their 70s, because you're not the focus on the camera. You're just the voice.
Two or three times a game.
Yeah, but if Musburger was doing sideline reporting at 75, then he'd be like, "Hey, Grandpa, what are you doing out there? Don't get hurt." So I don't know what that magical age is. I don't think it's 53. Tafoya is only 49, so it's not that's not the age either. But at some point, there's got to be a point where you gotta.
I mean, I think the magical age is whenever they get somebody that they feel can replace you.
Yeah.
So whether she was 53 or 43 or whatever, whatever they felt in their eyes by whatever metrics Aaron Andrews was ready, that was going to happen. They're going to make the call to the bullpen.
So the new closer will make her debut week one.
So we get Aikman, Buck, Aaron Andrews, and Saragusa?
I don't think Saragusa is part of the A-team, is he?
I know he's done some games with the A-team. I don't know if he's a flex player. He's like he's a B-plus player.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, yeah, you know Aikman and Buck get crap all the time. Adding Aaron Andrews to this may make it, like, the most hated team in football in terms of coverage.
Which is unfortunate because both of those guys are good at what they do. And
I don't know. But I think people just don't like Buck.
Yeah. He's actually a pretty funny guy. He's a pretty charismatic dude. I don't understand why all the Joe Buck hate.
I like him better than his daddy. Like from a
that personality, standpoint. Yeah. Jack was, you know, Jack was just that old dude. He was just,
yeah. Like it surprises me that. I mean, for lack of a better term, he is kind of the broadcasting face of Fox Sports.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But he's someone that does not get afforded the respect of, you know, his peers, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe not his peers, but in the eyes of viewers, like this. Joe Buck gets crushed, whether it's baseball or football.
He's John Cena. We'll look back 20 years from now, and we'll be like, damn, Joe Buck was actually pretty good at his job. And it'd be far too late, because he'll be retired by then.
You know, Joe Buck gets a lifetime pass for me because of those Leon commercials?
Yeah.
For Budweiser?
Yeah.
We're here with Leon. Hey, look here, Joe Buck. Leon didn't have time to talk right now. So I'm like, Joe Buck's cool in my book. Yeah, that's kind of the big news this week. A lot of misogyny going around, but unlike Floyd Mayweather or what's the Callahan and
the Dennis Callahan show with Dennis. The guy who actually made the comments was Kurt Minahan.
So he's not he wasn't even like the main host.
No, he's like the co-host or sidekick. Nah.
So yeah, don't waste your time listening to that show. Listen to Kings of Sport. And the Dan Le Batard show. I'll give you permission to listen to that this week. But that's going to do it. This is a show that loves all women of all creeds and colors, loves all races, loves everybody.
Even Alfred. That's our second Alfred.
Even Alfred.
By the way, thank you all for the all the support and offers to fill in or replace
Alfred.
Yeah,
we didn't get into that.
Yeah, we should discuss that real quick. Thank you, but I think we're good for the time being. And
yeah, it works out much better schedule wise, just the two of us. I mean, there will be occasions where we have a guest host, but it's not going to be like we're not looking to add a new host right this minute. You know, because we're going to make some changes to the show, and we want to make the show the best it can be. And, you know, thanks for all. Like I said, I've got probably 5 or 6 emails or tweets or inbox messages. You know, people like, hey, if you need somebody, I can do this. So, you know, we appreciate the enthusiasm for the show, but for the time being, it's just going to be me and Marcus and maybe an occasional guest host.
And no need to trash Alfred and his sports knowledge to try to.
By trashing Big Nasty,
which is funny, but
favor.
Yeah.
Like if I talk shit about Alfred, they'll like my
that's our job.
Maybe we'll have to do something later in the year. We have like a listener contest to see if somebody can co-host for a week.
Like yeah,
send in your 30-second sports take. And we'll play it on the show. Like we'll have a contest, and we'll vote. Marcus and I will vote on who's got the best 30 seconds.
There you go. I like this idea.
You can co-host the show one week.
There you go. Because I mean, to be honest, I had no idea this was like such a an interest to people that people were actually interested in coming on the show and talking with us. So
this is a coveted spot. I got a call from Pam Oliver this week.
Really?
She was like, they can't see my weave on the podcast.
They can't.
I'm like,
not yet.
No, they can't, Pam.
she'd bounce her weave off the mic and we could hear it.
But yeah, it is pretty cool though. Like every chance we're reminded that people actually listen to the show, and they're not only do they listen, but they're invested in the show. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
So we've got new theme music this week, and we've got a new logo provided by Brian Hillhouse, a.k.a. Mr. Thrill House. So,
thank you, Brian.
Thank
Appreciate
you,
it.
Brian.
Nice photo selection, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It captures the spirit of the program.
It does. You know?
Me and my degenerate gambler sidekick.
I haven't gambled a dime since I've been here. The last couple trips, I haven't gambled at all, so I take offense to this.
Calling his bookie about the Summer League.
There are no lines in the Summer League. That I know of.
I'm sure somebody's got some somewhere.
There are WNBA lines, and there's one... Oh, both games are over today. I was going to say, there was WNBA action this morning that I could have got my fits on, but there's nothing until Friday. Baseball's dead for the next 2 days, so...
Yeah, like, what's the over-under on Brittany Griner dunking again?
British Open tomorrow. I forgot. You could get some golf bets in.
Oh, yeah.
Bet on Tiger.
You see him making the cut? We regressed from will he win to will he make the cut?
No, he won't.
No? Uh-uh. You still think he's not healthy enough?
Yeah, he's still rusty. And that's, you know, those courses in Europe are not the courses you want to get your game back on. So.
Yeah, soggy and tricky and...
Those bunkers and yeah, it's. I think by the time the PGA rolls around, he'll be back and at least a legit threat leading into the tournament. But yeah, I don't see him making the cut.
I say he makes the cut, but he pulls out.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, he'll make the cut, but he'll pull out because he's like, you know. I can't, like, my body's just not right now.
That'd be unfortunate.
Yeah, it's ironic. Like, right now, Michelle Wee may be the best golfer from Stanford in the world right now.
Yeah, she might be. She's had quite the year.
So, hurry up and get well, Tiger.
Yeah, please.
Golf is not fun when Tiger Woods isn't right. Even if he's not winning, golf is better when Tiger's playing. So that's going to do it for this week. Another fun week, another great week on the Kings of Sport podcast, powered by Place to Be Nation. Brother Marcus, where can people follow you and check out all the events that you were involved in and maybe get some inside information on the NBA Summer League?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
And you can follow me at N8 MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Check out the Mr. Throwback Thursday show this week. They've got a panel. Get this, Marcus. Mm. I think you might enjoy this show. It's a panel where we break down, because it's show 25 for Mr. Throwback Thursday, so Jamie wanted to do something big. And it's a panel where we give our five essential hip-hop albums and then our five favorite hip-hop tracks.
Ooh.
And the guests on the program, the panel consists of Jamie and Bill, of course, myself, Bobby Fresh, J.P. Luprani, who's a podcaster that does like 15 different podcasts. You've got a listener that won a contest who's on the show, Liz Scott. And then your friend... Alfredo Torres makes an appearance.
Oh, no.
On the program. So you got seven dudes who can talk. Talking
about
hip-hop.
Is it all the same time, or did he record them separately?
Well, we're all doing a roundtable style show.
And all over Skype?
All over Skype.
Wow, no issues?
We had a few issues, but for the most part, it worked out pretty well. There was a little bit of crosstalk here and there, but I mean, when you got seven dudes who... Like, some of us were on video Skype, some were on just the audio Skype.
Huh.
So it worked out pretty well, and I think it's an interesting show. Some great discussion was had, and I'll just give a sneak preview. Somebody had K7, Come Baby Come, as one of their five favorite albums.
Alfredo.
No, it was not Torres, but yeah. Right. That's a teaser for you. So if you're interested in hip-hop and you're interested in hearing more of me than just the one show a week, you can check out this week's edition of Mr. Throwback Thursday, which should be up right now. You can find them on iTunes and Stitcher. You can follow all of us, or both of us now. There's no more all of us.
No.
You can follow both of us at KOSPOD, KOS_POD. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport. Check us out on Stitcher and iTunes. And again, thanks everybody for listening to the show. Like, the last show is doing pretty good numbers.
Yeah, this is the last show is probably the best show we've done in a long time, actually.
I'm not going to be that guy that draws a corollary between recent events and the spike in numbers.
I'm just saying that the last show that did this well was the last show we actually didn't have Alfred on. We had Sierra on. So I'm just pointing it out.
just giving you some statistical analysis.
Yep.
So, oh, I think that's a good place to end things this week, Marcus.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So again, we encourage feedback. That's something we're going to try to start doing more of. Like we had this week from Steve. Even if we disagree with your feedback, we want to hear what you think about these topics and about the show in general. So hit us up on Twitter or Facebook and get your voice out there. So that's going to do it for this week. I think I'm going to go pre-order WWE 2K15, and Marcus is going to watch some more Summer League action.
Back to the gym.
Have you seen Doc Rivers?
Did not see Doc. He's here somewhere. Did see our friend Gary Washburn. Did see our friend Mark Spears. He's good. Trying to think who else have I bumped into.
Does Clipper Darrell attend Summer League games?
He normally does. That's where I first met Clipper Darrell a few years ago. But he is not here. I have not talked to him in a while. I wonder if he's holding out until the Sterling thing gets done. But he's not here.
Interesting. Yeah, that's kind of the other thing. Like, people, the Sterling thing's kind of been under the rug.
Yeah.
Like, LeBron kind of knocked that off of between the draft and LeBron. Nobody's talking about Sterling.
Which is good. We need a break from that.
Yeah. So Clipper Darrell never forgets, though.
Never.
We hope that you won't forget to check us out next week for an all-new edition of the Kings of Sport. So, for Marcus Vanderberg, I'm the Godfather Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network. Whether you like it or not, he's back. DADDY, thanks, thanks.